You were basically trying to represent how microaggressions translate into violence all the way into now becoming this place that holds all this information about at all of these intersections of both identity and violence. I mean, that in itself feels like quite a journey.
That's so well summarized.
Yeah, very well summarized. We will use this for our next. I will listen to this podcast again to, like, you know, remember what is it that you do. Listen to this podcast. You'll understand.
Hello, namaste, adab, zindabad. Welcome to another episode of Fursat Feminism. I am Deepa.
I am Arundhati.
And today we have a slightly different episode for you. To lay a little bit of context, one of the things that I think Aru and I were constantly, you know, thinking about, talking about, was this process of dreaming and building on an idea together. Everybody who has come on our episodes are in some way or the other dreaming of an alternative feminist reality. They may or may not be able to work towards it. They may or may not have the resources to build on those ideas and dreams that they have. But we as feminists, I think, are constantly trying, at least in our own small spaces, to disrupt our realities. And we wanted to do an episode where we can talk to some of those people who have been working on building a dream together. Get a sense of what it means to build a feminist project, which essentially disrupts the status quo, which essentially creates a small space for themselves, creates a narrative which is not out there, which counters the larger hegemonic, heteronormative, patriarchal narratives. What does it mean to do that? What does the everyday of that look like? What does it mean to build relationships? What does it mean to have those epiphanous moments and, you know, come to that realization, this is what we will do. With that spirit, hopefully in a series of many such episodes, today we have Joe and Mrinalini with us, who are working on a project called Transform. And so, so happy to have you guys here. Hi, Mrinalini. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Just to give you a little bit of introduction of Joe and Mrinalini, we know each other from the Global Feminist Pitch. We immediately were stunned by their idea. Like, their presentation was something that I think Aru and I have constantly talked about because it was just so thoughtful. So yeah, tell us about Transform. Tell us, how did you guys meet and how did the story start? Wherever you want to begin with.
We met, I used to be Mrinalini's boss. I don't even like the word boss, but we were on projects together, and I was an editor at this place and Mrinalini was an illustrator at the same place, and we used to work a lot together. And I think we became friends because we had to discuss a lot of stuff when we had to make illustrations and, you know, things like that. And one day I woke up and I had an idea and I dragged Mrinalini in, and now Mrinalini is a part of it and does not want to leave me. So we just smashed that hierarchy and we were like, no,
yeah,
absolutely not.
No, honestly, another thing is that we very uncannily had a lot of similar experiences with respect to, you know, our queerness and just our general experiences of that. And so that ended up becoming a big discussion topic. And I think that's also kind of how the two of us managed to work so well on Transform.
Yeah, it sounds very feminist. Like, that's just what feminists just go and put themselves in one pot and they're like, let's do a project together. We'll change the world, kind of weird witch energy that happened. What happened here as well. But also, I think I should also mention that I am a huge fan. I don't want to say was, because I still am a huge fan of Mrinalini's artwork. So Mrinalini is an illustrator and researcher primarily. And Mrinalini has been working on some independent projects that I was doing also. So it was not always a hierarchical relationship. There were just many avenues where we found ourselves working with each other. And I was just like, oh, this person's really easy to communicate to at my level. And I think Mrinalini felt the same.
Yes. Yeah. Why is this?
Assume.
I assume. Because it's been a year now. I assume. But yeah, like, coming to how why transform and how transform. Of course, like, I don't know how we're going to put a billion trigger warnings right now, because transform is a tool about violence, especially against trans people in South Asia. So anybody listening to this, me and Rinalini very callously use words around violence because we've been working on it for so long. We're super desensitized to it. But of course, if this makes you uncomfortable, you should not listen to it right now unless you have material to get you out of this space. So just giving you that trigger warning and content warning that we're going to be talking about violence in some form, somehow, in the rest of the podcast.
We can also just mention here that in case anyone does get triggered before we talk about our website itself, we do have a page on our website, which is a trigger toolkit. Yeah, and it's got a video of Joe's very cute cat, Inji, and a bunch of other grounding techniques and playlists and stuff. And so it might be useful to keep that open on the side while listening.
Yes, that is something we can provide. So when we were in school, college, or just generally, I feel a lot of people have come across this thing called the rape culture pyramid. So the rape culture pyramid is just a thing where the first edition, I think now it's on its sixth or seventh edition. The first edition was just trying to show that with small microaggressions of, like, you know, girls should be like that, boys should be like this, etc., etc., you talk about gender roles and what girls are allowed to do and what boys are allowed to do. And then it eventually leads to larger, more criminal kinds of violence. The whole point of it was that all violence is connected and it's not just a joke. It's not just etc. And that's the same thing that happened over here, because I felt like people didn't understand how their daily transphobia translates to trans people dying in very high numbers. I think the latest report is, so the past year, more than 350 trans people have been killed. And out of that, so many people are people of color, so many of them are sex workers, and yet we still have, like, daily transphobia.
Yeah, I think 2021 was even ranked as the most dangerous year for trans people.
It's not a small number, it's not a joke, it's not in quotes, a minority that we constantly, and even if it was, I thought the point of a democracy was to take care of the minorities as well, no matter how small that minority is. But yeah, the minority thing just keeps coming up constantly. Why must we listen to a minority? Anyway, we won't go there. But yeah, so I was just like, okay, we need to connect these daily forms of transphobia to the larger statistics of reported murders and assault cases. And this also happened at a time where there were some, you know, very notable people from the community who had died recently, somebody in Tamil Nadu. All the time, I think, within the trans community, we just know that people suddenly talk about it, just like Dalit violence. We talk about it for like 10 days and then suddenly we don't talk about it, and then something else happens and then again we talk about it. I think I was just curious, and I think Mrinalini is also extremely curious about that. Like, why do we talk about violence the way we do? Is it only the discomfort? Or is it just our understanding of violence that, oh, this is something that happens once in a while. Why should we talk about it all the time? Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while it happens and there are things happening to solve it, etc. Mm-hmm. So we just wanted to make a trans version of the rape culture pyramid, and I called up Mrinalini and I was like, hey, do you want to, because Mrinalini is really good at infographics as well, very good at putting information in very accessible methods, and the both of us really agree on the fact that education should be accessible, as simple as that. It really has to be accessible, it really has to be easy to understand, easy to share, whether that's, you know, researched material or non-researched material, personal narratives, etc. Everybody should have access to it, everybody should be able to share it. That's why I asked Mrinalini, and 1 year later we have made this a website. It was supposed to be one infographic.
Yeah, just an Instagram post. But also, Joe, wasn't this also at the time when you were I think preparing to, or had started conducting consent-related workshops for the people at university?
Unfortunately, at that time, even the edition now that exists of the rape culture pyramid is a little less gendered, but the one that is usually used is extremely gendered. It has the male perpetrator, female victim kind of situation that's happening, which is reductive for many communities, many people, many forms of violence, etc. So we were like, okay, it's just a triangle.
we will be able to, you know, talk about some microaggressions that happen and how they affect larger forms of violence. That's simple. And then every single call that we got on, we were just like, yeah, but, you know, the lives of Hijra people are just not the same as the lives of Aravani people, are not the same as the lives of trans women in general, are not the same as the lives of trans men, is not the same as incarcerated trans people, is not the same as etc., etc., etc. And every time we met, we were just like, okay, no, there are more groups that we need to talk about that face this violence in a different way. And it was just not enough to put this in a triangle. And Brinaldini tried so much to put it in squares, circles, triangles, everything. Like, she can tell you about all the different shapes we have tried to,
I know,
translate this information in.
I like Transformers, we envisioned it to become an open source, accessible, pedagogical, especially self-pedagogical tool in the form of a website, because the infographic thing just was not working. And we wanted it to be intersectional and collaborative and bringing the controls into the hands of each user. And I think we'll talk about like each of these keywords separately and exactly where each of these came from. I think Joe's already touched upon the accessibility part a little bit. But yeah, in terms of design, so we really wanted to stick to the broad categorizations that the original rape culture pyramid has already done, which is normalization of certain transphobic behaviors to leading to degrading behaviors against members of the trans community, which finally lead to just outright assault, including things like fatal violence against members of the trans community. And we felt like that was a really good breakup that we could then adapt into more specific categories of violence. So some of them are similar, but I think most of them are very specific, you know, based on our own reading or experiences of other people we know in the community. And they include a lot of things. We've also tried to talk about, you know, say chosen family, about police violence, about damage to livelihoods on account of a person's gender identity. And then we've also gone down to just, you know, basic media portrayal and how that is one of the things that eventually circles back to, you know, even things like medical injustices by practitioners. So, yeah, and we tried to stick to the triangle format, as Joe said. We really did. But we just realized I think we finally came up with about 20 categories or 20 social groups of trans people. Joe mentioned some of them. A few others would be intersex trans people in sex work, Dalit and oppressed caste trans people, Adivasi and tribal trans people. So, you know, after figuring out the different identity groups that we wanted to include, we just realized that wasn't working. And that's actually how the idea of the website came about, which is that we wanted people to be able to navigate each of these very freely. And we wanted them to be able to see how similar or how different is the violence faced by a certain trans identity group.
The website itself feels like a mammoth undertaking. So that must have been quite a journey, you know, that whole, like, that decision.
Everything starts.
All the worst things start as Google Sheets.
Fortunately and unfortunately, we have this beautiful tool called Google Sheets that we, yeah. Oh God, all the worst and best collaborations happen through that one thing called Google Sheets and master sheets that do these things. But like the first thing we did for Transform was that we just put all these groups together, put all the kinds of violences together, and we, in our own experience and our own limited reading and understanding, wrote down how does each of these groups face each of these kinds of violences. For example, an intersex trans person will face infanticide much more than another person from another trans group. Or like, you know, gender change surgeries, which are invasive on a child, does not exactly happen for people who are not intersex. Put those points together. And the next thing we did was
well, we can't do this alone. And what if we are wrong? So we just called a bunch of our friends, 30 trans people, and they all reviewed all this information and they told us if we are missing something out. And that's where it started. It literally started with a very beautifully complicated Google sheet that 30 people reviewed.
Oh my goodness.
And then it became confidence.
Guys, this is crazy. Because,
yeah, because these guys were like, you know what? All our trans friends were like, this seems cool. Y'all are mad, but this seems cool. And we were just like, yeah, let's do it.
And that's actually the reason we first started applying to grants, which is that we really wanted to be able to pay the people who were reviewing the content and were helping us. And I mean, that also, of course, stems from the fact that we're so frustrated with how there's all these calls for research interns and research assistants that are unpaid. You know, you'll get a CV and an experience sheet or whatever. And I think from the very start, like, I think that's the reason we are still applying for grants, because we want to involve as many people as possible, but also remunerate them fairly for their efforts. And that's one thing Joe and I have been very clear on from the start.
It's just something that we are really, really like upset about, especially in academia. It happens so much in academia because, you know, you get these GTAs and you tell them that they only have to teach these many classes, but all the prep that comes before, the emails that you have to write, the marking you have to do, nothing is paid for, nothing is accounted for. And we are suddenly in a culture where people are able to get on call and tell you, well, you're not going to be getting paid for all the hours, but I mean... How is that an okay sentence to, like, you know, say to somebody?
I mean you guys also must have experiences or definitely know someone who
I can see the
has,
big head
right?
nods so
I was just relating the first part of transform. I tell everybody this because I cannot comprehend it, and I still haven't found the words to comprehend it. But by the time I got to my MA in D school, Delhi School of Economics, I walk into my first economic sociology lecture. And for, like, the person is teaching us for 1.5 hours. This is the first time in my life that somebody has spoken a language that I understand, and I haven't understood a sentence in throughout 1.5 hours. Like, it did not make any sense. It was just so obscure, and this almost need to be obscure and, you know, not accessible. And it felt like there was a currency that all academics operated in, which was be as obscure and difficult to read as possible. And, you know, if I'm able to understand you and you're able to understand me, that's the only time we sort of make sense.
Yeah, and that you're intelligent if you are not understood. That's literally the thing that also pisses us off about academia, that... And I guess with transform, like, so many of our, you know, like, historical movements, I mean the Dalit movement, I mean queer trans movements, they've always been talking about how education should be freely available. Black movements have been talking about this, because that's the only way change, true change and transformation can actually come, when education is in the hands of everybody and they can freely access it and share it with each other and discuss whatever, you know, is happening. How, what are you going to discuss if you don't understand something? I think that's exactly what they want to do to us. Like, they don't want you to understand it so that you can't question it.
Yeah.
And like me and Rinalini, like, another frustration we do share is, especially within PhDs, I'm a PhD student, and I don't think that people within academia talk enough about how the life of a PhD student who has one other PhD person in some completely other, field. Like, my uncle is the only other person who has a PhD in my family. And he has one in pharma. Pharma is very different from anthropology. He can understand me, but can he really understand exactly what I'm trying to do? I try to explain ethnography, but there is only a certain amount he can understand about the challenges I face, for example, on field or as a PhD student. As compared to a person who has generational wealth of knowledge from the PhDs and the higher education professors and their families, those people, they grow up with knowledge about how to do a PhD. This how to do, nobody teaches you. You are thrown into a PhD and you're just supposed to figure out how to do. And what ends up happening to a lot of these people is, if nobody has taught them, they will also not teach anybody else, because they think that there is a rite of passage. Which is so sad. It's unfeminist, and it hurts me that you were in a sociology class this really, really frustrates us, and knowledge should not be held in these little pockets. And it has always been used against marginalized communities. Women were kept out, trans people are kept out, Dalit people are kept out, Black people are kept out, so that they can use it against us eventually at some point.
Even just the jargon, like even if it's like, as you already spoke about, the jargon that is used in academic spaces is almost, it is a gatekeeping mechanism to keep other people out, and you know, to keep people from even other disciplines to weigh in with their experiences, even if, you know, they are relevant. And so, like, that's one of the reasons we've actually tried Transform to be in very simple language, and anything that requires further explanation is linked on a separate glossary sheet, and you can also hover over certain words. And, you know, the description that we have used for that particular word, or as we understand it, or as our readers and users understand it, which is feedback that they can provide to us, you know, that's written. It's not only the jargon, like Joe and I were talking about this earlier, that so many times the lived experience of communities that are being discussed in academic jargon is discounted.
Yeah, about glossaries, definitely, like, that's one thing. We did not want to take anything for granted, because just as we were talking about how you are just put into a place and you are supposed to somehow figure out how to do things, and that causes a lot of mental, like, stress on somebody, because they think that they're supposed to know this and they don't know this. And of course, you're going to ask yourself, why don't I know this? Did I do something wrong? And that's such a horrible place. Educational institutions of all places should not be making people feel like that. It should be making people feel like, yeah, okay, I don't know this, I will find out, or somebody is going to tell me, or I can ask somebody about it, but nobody asks. So yeah, which is why, like, we with the glossary, by explaining every single thing in whatever detail, it's okay if a trans person is reading this and they know what everything means. And it's also okay if a person who has never heard of the trans community is reading this. Nothing is going to be taken for granted, and that you know something, and that, like, you know, it should not be that tumhe to pata hi hoga, because this is an educational resource at the end of the day. And yes, of course, about languages also, we really, really wanted to translate all of what we were creating and collecting, all the research that we've done. We really wanted to translate it. But eventually we figured out that that might not be a good idea, because it was very, like, not feasible.
And expensive.
Yeah, like, literally financially. And also because we didn't know who needs what language. But we do, like, some of the earlier conversations we had were definitely me being extremely strong on the thing that I refuse to translate this first into Hindi, because I'm South Indian and I will not do that again. Because just because, again, taking for granted that, array, first we'll just translate everything to Hindi and then we'll see other languages. So our first few languages, literally, I think we were thinking of Tamil, Marathi, and was there any other language that we were thinking of? Bengali?
Bengali. Sure.
Yeah, Bengali. Some also, like, diaspora communities. We thought of the diaspora communities that also exist, because all of the information that we're putting together, although it is based on India and larger South Asian contexts, a lot of our experiences are very, very similar. So they can be easily read by and understood by people across, around the world. So that's the experience with language that we had. But of course, you can still Google Translate it, but we all know that even Google Translate is not accessible.
You know, one thing that struck me, and this is something I've been thinking throughout this last 30 minutes, I think, is that whatever this website that you're talking about, the way you guys talk about it, the kind of elements you have in it, it's so humanized that it's almost a living thing in itself, you know. And that's something I've always felt that misses from most, not just academic spaces, but even development sector spaces, right? Like when we make projects or when we write anything in an academic language, it's dehumanized to a level that it feels like you're talking about some inanimate stuff. And it's just there in a vacuum. And this whole idea, I think, takes it to another level, to be able to empathize not just empathize, but also like bring in that kind of nuances into a website and be able to say that, yeah, we acknowledge and understand every single lived experience, and hence, you know, talk about language, talk about, and I just feel like general academia spaces mein, that's like really, really missing. And when you talk about it as a generally, I've had experiences of having those conversations with my professor, and always I've been told that, which I find a very patriarchal statement, that you're being too emotional, or you're you have to like distance yourself from it to look at it objectively, or whatever, like some fancy, you know, justification of why it has to be dehumanized so much. So, yeah.
Oh, objectively is such an irritating word.
I wonder if this person could make the same sentence objectively. No, even the sentence is subjective.
Yeah, so many academic spaces become bubbles that even when you're going out of them or moving to a different one, there's suddenly an entire new set of jargon that, you know, you have to get used to, which is another thing that, you know, we really wanted to address when we were conceptualizing Transform, and we want it to be like, okay, we want this to be absolutely voluntary. We want people to tell us what they think is working and what is not working. And we have for that reason, we have like a very detailed set of feedback forms and submission forms that people can, that people can use based on, you know, what they're thinking about. And, and one more section that we have on our tool, which is something that we added, I think, later, right, Joe, which is people can talk about their own lived experiences in whatever language they feel comfortable. They can submit it to us either anonymously or not non-anonymously. They can identify themselves as, hey, I belong to this trans identity group and I have faced this kind of violence or these kinds of violence, and this is what my experience was. And this is also related to the whole evidence building part about academia and how, you know, regular people can't be experts and their, you know, their experiences.
Yeah, it directly connects to what Deepa was saying, that, you know, first of all, if I could have one coin for every time somebody called me not academic enough, I would be very, very rich, because
we won't need all these grants.
If challenging this ivory tower makes me non-academic, if talking to you in a way that you can understand so that you can challenge me for not being academic makes me non-academic, then I'm not an academic, and I'm completely comfortable with that. And the both of us are also really comfortable with being wrong. If tomorrow somebody comes and tells us that, you know, what this whole idea of transform should only be transformed, we're okay with that. Because, like, you know, this is what we think. This is what 30 other people think. And we are creating this tool. But it really does not have to be something everybody agrees with. And that's fine. So we will try our best to, like, you know, make it as inclusive of all people's opinions as possible, in whatever way possible, because it's a tool. So if people want to add more types of violence, they feel like we haven't addressed this properly, they want to add one more group of people that, or a group of people that should be separated from all the other groups of people, we can't reduce it. We absolutely agree, we can't reduce it. The other thing about lived experience and evidence building, yes, there can be experts based on reading. Yes, people who have read about a certain group of people for 20 years of their life, or done whatever they have done for 20 years of their life, can be experts. But so can people who have lived those lives. And that alternate story should always exist on the same plane, not on two separate playing fields. Why can't we all just talk about it together rather than, well, I've done this for 20 years. I've lived it for 20 years. What are you saying? We could play this, you know, game all day. It's really sad that, you know, it's the same thing. It's gatekeeping. And that's exactly why we should be funding more queer people, trans people, to do their own projects, to see how they view their own lives, how they view their own needs. I absolutely cannot make this project for, like, I can help somebody, but I cannot make it for a Dalit friend of mine, because I absolutely have no understanding but that person does. And they will be able to tell me how exactly I can work with them based on the work that I have done. So because we get the funding, thanks, funders. Thanks, all funders. This is a call to all our funders saying thank you. This is where the ads come in. You need to give money to the people who are able to talk about their lived experience. It's just all about knowledge production, who gets to keep the means of production of knowledge and who gets to say that this is correct knowledge and this is wrong knowledge based on what. Yeah, which is why, like, you know, the lived experience part is extremely important to the building of Transform, because trans people are not believed. Somebody recently told me that the reason why transphobia also exists a lot more in today's world is because it's very easy to say things like, I'm uncomfortable with talks about gender, but they won't say the same thing about racism, even though the number of people who get killed are very, like, transphobia is a lot more okay in the public eye even now as compared to racism. I would say even casteism is still okay in Indian society, which is why it is so, like, you know, it's so ingrained in the way of people asking, so what's your surname and things like that. We still do shit like that. And that is the problem. But yeah, that is something that can be unpacked a lot more later on. But yeah, lived experiences are extremely important because unfortunately we need evidence when we have to. Evidence building is very important, and giving that control in the hands of the people who go through this is also very important, because no matter what we do, I say this as a researcher is also an editor. They are going to, no matter how many interviews I take, I am always going to edit out some parts and put some parts in my thesis, and that becomes published research. So how do we, and that's okay, but we should talk about that. That this is an edited version of the reality that exists. So my version can exist, but so should all the, like, you know, the original thoughts of the people who have shared those thoughts with me. It cannot only be the edited versions, only be the abridged versions.
You know, it's not only that trans people aren't believed, but they're often the last people to be included that in projects that are supposed to be catering to them. Even when, you know, their opinions are considered, it's often filtered, it's often sanitized, in quotations, made more to suit, you know, the general cis heteronormative society before it
and
is.
Certain kind of trans people are, like, you know, listened to more, like, for example, the less radical ones, more moderate ones. It depends on what people find radical, of course, like, you know. You know, trans people are picked and dropped depending on what they are saying and what the society is comfortable with right now. If that trans person is doing sex work, I'm not very sure about it. If that person has been incarcerated, I'm not very sure about that. Mm-hmm. If that trans person is not a binary trans person, but they still experience transness, I'm not very sure about that. So, you know, it's those constant negotiations that is also transphobic. Because you're not allowed to be, and with that, you also have this image of a perfect activist. That's a lot of pressure to put on a person. You have this one trans person who has, for example, said, let's say they've put one story about their lives on Instagram, and then 500 people start following them. What do you think that does to their mind? Automatically, they're like, oh, I should, like, probably post more about this. That is normal human behavior, to be like, oh, okay, people want to hear more about this. This is rewarded, and that's what we're doing. And I have literally gone through that. And that's how, like, I would. And by the end of it, I burnt out so badly. I deleted my Instagram account. I only have, like, an account where I can put whatever I want, mostly my cat. But that pressure is a lot to put on a person. The moment I deleted my Instagram account, I have not gotten one text asking me to come and speak for Trans Day of Remembrance. I do not want to be remembered on Trans Day of Remembrance because I want to sleep. But when you have that public persona or whatever that has not only been built by you and you in response to people who are responding to you, you are constantly called upon. And often the last thought, only during 4 days of the year. I can count on my hands. And my partner still goes through that because they're a trans musician.
Wow.
So the same thing keeps happening.
So basically I think Transform is you know, the result of Joe and I's many tears and, you know, many our tears. Lot of sadness that is just like through us talking. But another thing that I think we didn't really touch upon as much is like why we wanted to focus on trigger tools and content warning so much.
This is also like more frustration with academic spaces. What ends up happening is, like, you know, since we are so in quotes objective in academic spaces, in quotes objective, we put a lot of trauma in the classroom and do not address that trauma. We talk about Dalit deaths and trans murders and we just leave it there. There are trans students, Dalit students, Black students, etc. There are so many people in that classroom. There are people who are thinking things, people who are going to talk about their own stories in these classrooms. But we do nothing with that. We are like, okay, let's move on to the next lesson because we are running on some timeline of we have to finish all these courses and we have to get to this assignment in place. And then we also tell our students, put your heart on your sleeve. Talk about the most personal thing that you've experienced. And then what? We keep doing that. That's what we expect.
God, the extractiveness of academia. I can, that could be another podcast, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and we expect, like, you know, expect that from students, and then we do nothing with it. We just expect them to put this in this space and then go back out into a world which is still that violent. We're not saying that the trigger toolkit solves that, of course. We're not that naive, but we do know that, you know, when you make a tool like this that primarily talks about violence, people also deserve to go somewhere else. And, you know, just we wanted to make it an inbuilt feature of Transform that you are, you know, you do not have to keep taking in information and information and information. And that's not how learning has to happen. It can happen in parts. It can happen when you are lying in bed. It can happen in any other way. It can happen when you click on a small icon and it reads out the information to you. There is no better kind of information. Reading more books doesn't make you smarter. And reading books in English doesn't make you smarter than that. Read what you want, listen to it. There are different ways to absorb this information, understand it, and engage with it. So, which is why the trigger toolkit is also something that we created from our, you know, from ourselves. Like, Mrinalini literally designed a breathing, you know, bubble that, like, you know, makes you, that's the first thing you see when you press the trigger toolkit. And of course, you can go to the trigger toolkit from any of the pages around the whole tool so that you're reminded that there is a thing, you know, that you can press to take you away from this place, because sometimes, you know, you don't want to stay in the same space. Then we thought, you know what, it would be so cool that if we put the videos and pictures of our cats and our dogs into our YouTube channel, because they give us so much happiness. They give so many queer trans people so much happiness, so many feminists so much happiness. And I feel pets are very integral to our mental health. So we were like, share it with other people who will be, you know, this thing. And then we started making playlists on Spotify, and that's also part of our trigger toolkit. These are playlists made by other trans people to show people what grounds them. Includes obviously trans musicians, etc., etc., etc.
But also, I want to mention, in addition to the, it's not just the trigger toolkit. So our tool, so each of our 200 plus pages of the tool itself opens with a content warning. So all of the information is blurred out until, you know, you consent to proceed.
Like, just because you've learned somewhere that there is this tool about violence doesn't mean you want to go there and immediately learn ki some 100 murders have happened. That not taken for granted, no. Because we just figured that there's going to be all kinds of people who come and see that, whether that's trans people or children as in, like, not extremely young children, but, you know, of a certain age, do not need to constantly be bombarded. And just because you've read one page doesn't mean you want to read the other page. So just trying to make it as responsive to a person's needs as possible for a website.
As much as we can code, we're still figuring out some of these.
We're still figuring it out. It's a headache.
No, it's incredible that that's built into the design, because I mean, again, if because we're all sort of, because we've all inhabited feminist spaces, and you know, we're all in different ways victims of abuse in different forms, the ease with which people feel that they can just access you to just share stories without warning, without asking, without consent, without sort of, and this is something I've learned from Deepa a lot, is to sort of set those boundaries, to ask for permission. Also, she keeps reminding me, you don't have to take it, like every time, you know, if it comes to you. But that's why I'm thinking through that. I mean, thinking through that physical experience of what that does to me when I'm sort of, even if I'm consciously going and I'm starting that conversation, I'm not fully ready for what's coming to me in that conversation. And so it feels similar to sort of navigating a web page where you're like, oh, I'm curious, so I am pressing this, but I don't know what's coming at me. So if it's like asking for my permission or if I'm ready to receive this information, that feels so thoughtful. And
we want to give that control to people's hands, that I know there might be some people who'll get annoyed. They'll be like, "Arey, how many times you're going to ask the same thing?" And that's okay. Please get irritated. It is fine. You still have to, you know, go through the feeling of being in control of the information that is coming to you. Because that's exactly what we don't have in the outside world. Like all of us, like, you know, in some or the other way, marginalized communities. There is violence being like thrown at you. Your experience is being extracted from you. And just violence just becomes a part of our everyday fabric of thought, constantly thinking about something or the other happening. So at least somewhere there should be some control of, you know, what you are taking on the internet.
I remember our very first conversation wherein just, you know, we were, I don't know, we were just starting to, or I think, Joe, you were telling me about like the first initial idea you had of the pyramid and what all types of violence could be included. And that then our conversation was, hey, will you get triggered by this? Will the other person get triggered by this? Like, should we be careful not to mention
now there are signal
things?
Messages that say, chalo, murder ka kya hua? Like, assault ho gaya kya? And we're talking about categories. Nobody's going to understand.
I know.
Please listen to this podcast to not implicate us further in anything.
Yeah, our group chats look very, very scary. Like, really shady if you were just to...
really shady.
Without context.
Yeah. Without context.
Yeah.
Aaj police violence kare.
Wow.
When you guys were presenting, no, Joe and Rinali, I remember like Arundhati and I were having this conversation only. We're like, we just don't know how they managed to do this, because it's like really for us, it's just, I mean, yeah, we have worked on some cases of violence sometime in life together, and like a couple of cases has shaken us to the core to a level where we're like, nahin, matlab, nahin ho paega, matlab hai na. So when you guys were presenting for the first time, I think that was a major conversation that happened between the both of us. And then later on, when you started sharing that there are 200 plus pages and all that, I'm like, oh my God, I got with a PhD and everything, I was just like, kya karna kya cha rahe hai? This is a 6-month project for them also. What is happening?
But yeah, I don't know.
Incredible.
Oh. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing about Transform. We've grown so passionate about it that initially maybe we were hoping that it would finish off with that one Instagram post or finish off with the second or first grant, but it's just continued. And I think the thing about Drew and I, and also why we get along so well, and I'm sure the two of you would relate, is that we constantly have new ideas and we have absolutely no chill, and we keep wanting to do more, and you know, we get really excited about it, and we make new Excel sheets, and you all know.
Four of us sitting here have full-time other jobs, are doing other things, and freelance work. I know, yeah.
Ridiculous. Matlab, these are our side projects.
But we're in love, yeah. Na. Isi ko to pyar kehte hain. Like, I just don't feel like I'm working at all. I'm always chilling with Manalini on call.
Same, oh, yeah.
Same. That's true.
See, exactly. True. So is it work? I don't know. Feminist work that doesn't feel like work. But because you love it so much and you love the people that you do it with, that it doesn't...
Yeah.
It doesn't seem inherently exploitative because you are making it not exploitative.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is what adults told us to do when we were younger. You know that whole do what you love and you won't work a day.
Work a day in your life. No.
Yeah. But they didn't tell us that, you know, we won't get funding. Yeah. they didn't warn us about all the grant rejections, you know, that we would receive as well.
Yeah. At least I do.
But that part of this feels like work. Applying for grants definitely feels
It does. It definitely
does. Raising the money to do the work you love. That's the part they don't tell you, Joe. Okay. That's the part that elders don't tell you. Do what you love, but work for to get paid for it.
Exactly. And I wish it was just like random people being like, wow, these cool people are doing cool work. I'll just come and give you like $4 million.
Wow.
Just
live your life. It should be like
only
that.
Only if we were cis men, I think that would have been possible.
I don't think they are going to give us money, okay? They're going to be like, you should not talk about violence and all. How can we grow from it? By stop killing. Don't kill trans people. That's how.
What is your solution? Give me a solution.
But coming to solutions, this is another, like, this is a very new addition to our tool, which is still under development, which is that, you know, similarly to how this podcast has gone so far, we were like, there's just too much trauma and too much sadness and too much about violence here. And we really there needs to be something positive over here. And we also need to provide a space for people to say, how can I help? What can I do? Where can I educate myself more? And so on. And that's where we came up with the idea of a page, which is now titled Affirmative Action, which gives you links to, you know, different organizations, different projects, different spaces that one can donate to, contribute to in any way or form, that are working towards working with trans people in any capacity, pretty much. Yeah, I think that's one very recent addition to the tool.
Yeah,
that's
despite
one of our...
the violence that people are going through, like, despite it, a lot of trans people are working. So, like, obviously, when we came up with this idea, it was not like, well, let's make it positive. It was not some weird thing like that. But it was more like, okay, see, obviously, when people look at all of this information, they are either... there's going to be some energy generated. Either they're just going to close it all and they're like, oh God, I don't want to read that ever again. Or there might be people who are like, okay, but what can we do about this? This seems really serious. So there is a place where they can direct their energy, their money, et cetera, because, for example, the Trans Kitchen that runs in Tamil Nadu, they've been doing great work and they need the funds to continue that work. Another thing that I also forgot to mention is, like, you know, I mean, talking about the same vein of talking about how we are all connected and we do want to be connected. Just like how all the violence that against trans people are connected. Despite that violence, a lot of trans people are also thriving, surviving. That is also connected. One thing that we really wanted to talk about and, like, you know, make sure everybody knows is that Transform is not created as like, oh, this doesn't exist anywhere. Of course, yeah, the tool doesn't exist in its current format anywhere. But it is not like we're creating knowledge. We are accumulating the knowledge that has been for centuries, always been there with the trans community. Forget centuries, more, even more recently, people have been writing about their experiences in different places. So and all languages. Of our recommend read, yeah, and languages, and all of our recommended readings, and you know the vernacular archives, etc., connect to the language that has already been created by the community. So it's not nothing. It's not completely new information that we are creating, but it's all information that has been there, should have been read, should have been held up along with expert knowledge. Because another thing that we noticed right in the beginning is when we think about a lot of these researchers, including me, we Google some things and some five things come up. And with those five things, we make our entire argument. And in those five things, it's never the lived experience of people that is also counted. Or I have to look very, very deep. Like, it's after 6 years of working on sex workers' rights that I've been able to scratch the surface of what sex workers themselves say about their rights. 6 years. So I can't imagine, like, if a person is writing one paper, how they're going to find that information if you also don't know anybody from the community. So there is a lot of information. There is no dearth of it within the community, mostly in different languages. When a researcher goes somewhere, they should be able to find that. And we are trying to be that archive as well, so that there's no excuse. There's never an excuse ki I didn't find enough information about the trans community.
And like another thing is that we've involved, like we've been very clear about. So initially we were very clear on the fact that, oh, we only want trans and queer people to work on this. And then when we got funding, we sent out our first call for RAs because we desperately needed help in, you know, getting all the information together. And when we sent out the call, I think we got 50 or 60 applications, right, Jo?
Yeah, that was, we were like, oh no, we have to reject people. Yeah. We don't want to reject anybody. Give us more money.
We were expecting maybe 5 or 6 applications from maybe, like, you know, friends. And then what ended up happening is we had so many, you know, amazing applicants. Though our first step was to say, okay, now we're going to be prioritizing hiring trans people.
It's strange, right? We want to hire trans people, but we want them to deal with their own violence. It is strange and it is weird. But at the same time, we cannot get cis people on board for something as like an RA position, because not only does the trans community find it difficult to get jobs in the first place, secondly, a lot of this is informed by their own experiences, and that is very important to us. So it is a little complicated, but I mean, the best things are messy, and we acknowledge that.
No, I think I haven't mentioned this yet, but I really need to, like, for people who are listening to the podcast for the first time and don't know who either Jo or I am, is that, you know, that I am a cis person, and I feel extremely, you know, privileged to be a part of Transform and to be a co-producer of it, no less. And it's been, there's been a lot of, like, learning, of course, for me also, and a lot of navigating how to, you know, talk about violence faced by trans people, that I do benefit from gender privilege. And, like, that's something I'm working on every single day that we do work on Transform, and which is also, I think, like, the base, how Jo and I kind of divide what we are doing, and, you know, how the research is checked and vetted, and where our reviewers come in, and where everyone else who we hire as trans comes in.
I don't want to speak for Mrinalini, but me, definitely, I do face a little less violence as a trans person, because I do not... my immediate friends might not pass the way I do. And even with my immediate friends, like, I am a lot more privileged. So I've just taken that privilege and desensitized myself from this violence so that I can talk about this violence against the community, so that my friends don't have to sit and do this on an everyday basis. So that's how we are trying to use our privilege.
I mean, so this is also something that I think we mentioned on the homepage of our site, is just all the different privileges that the both of us benefit from, and how that has very evidently had an impact on how we have envisioned and built this tool. And that's also where our feedback forms come in.
Yeah, like, please yell at us in the feedback forms, being like, what is this? You all missed this. And we would really appreciate it, because this is for us. This tool is literally for us. It's not for anybody else.
The play on words with transform was something that I realized a little, like, it took me a little bit of time to get there, but I was just like, oh, this is brilliant. So I just wanted to mention what a fantastic play on word transform is.
And also, I think it's a good place to mention that transform, it wasn't called transform before. What was it called before?
Transparent.
Transparent. Yeah, it was called transparent. I think it was, we definitely wanted to do something with trans, of course, because, you know, trans people. But I think transparent happened because we thought, oh, we are like making the structure of violence transparent, but I was too deep. So we were like, you know, transform makes sense. Also because the both of us are learners and trying to practice transformative justice practices in our everyday life, so that that's how our systems of justice become later on, and free education, accessible education, and understanding violence, so that, you know, we don't further incarcerate people. It all comes from transformative justice practices from the civil rights movement and the Black People's Movement and Black Lives Matter. So that's why transform just stuck. I would say it stuck more than us. There was no definitive moment when we were like, we will now call it transform. It just stuck. And then Mrinalini made a nice logo, and then it looked also nice, so we were like,
yeah, let's stick to that. You know, even if, say, it's not accessible to someone online, maybe we can think about, you know, making it into a small pamphlet / brochure kind of thing, which gives an overview and then directs people to the site, you know, who are interested. But then we also want to make it, you know, fun and creative, you know, unlike the content of the tool. And we, you know, and we unfortunately do have to think about marketability and how to hook people onto, you know, what we're thinking about. So we've come up with this idea for this brochure kind of thing. And that is something that we can get translated and printed and distributed. And it's something that can be accessed across age groups and interpreted differently, you know, based on educational levels and so on and so forth. And Joe has designed this, so maybe let's say one side is information and the other side is something that can be spread out as a board. And Joe has designed this as, and what they've put right in the center is, you know, so like imagine a Monopoly board, and that place where you have chance and treasure chest, it's written in bold, this is not a game, right?
We actually want to show structural issues. It's not only cis people. Cis people are also a part of a structure. And trans people themselves are born into transphobic structures. We are transphobic until the time we attain some sort of enlightenment about our own genders. But of course, I was born transphobic because my parents are transphobic, and so are their parents, and so are their parents, until I am not, to a certain extent. I would still say a lot of the things that I might say as a trans person might be transphobic, and I just need to do better as time goes. But yeah, like, snakes and ladders didn't really work, which is why I had to do a very simple jump from one place to another. Use a die, take cards, and things happen to you. Of course, like, murderous things, because, you know, we're talking about violence. But it's a little fun. At least the colors will be pretty, I think. I don't know. Okay. Unfortunately, what happens is, with digital technology, as beautiful as digitization is, and with the amazing things we can do digitally, a lot of things, even in the classroom, there are so few teachers who use tactile like things, you know, to, you know, take it to class and make people feel something, and then ask them, how does this look, feel? What does it make you feel? What can you feel? What can you smell? those things are slowly not existing anymore, because if I can show it on a PPT, why would I show it to you on this thing? So yeah, of course it has its cons, because we can't send it to a lot of places. I don't know, maybe we can, we'll see if we can make it portable, but we just wanted something tactile also that we can, that somebody can play and sort of figure out. I think we're just trying to put out the same kind of information in as many ways as possible, so that it drives into people's minds that the violence that you see around you is not a one-time thing, and your trans joke today does have an effect on somebody tomorrow, and you need to be more responsible about what you do. And we, there are so many ways the same information can be either condensed in a way that younger students understand it. Even though it is about violence, we can absolutely talk about violence in a way that it doesn't trigger anybody. It has been done before, you know, because unfortunately, just like how earlier you wouldn't talk about Black people in your textbooks because it's too violent, and so Black history gets erased from your child's education, the same thing happens to trans people, Dalit people, etc., etc. We have this very, very sanitized version of our histories that is constantly presented. It's happened with the AIDS movement in the US as well, that you have all these wins that are celebrated, but not the suffering and the pain that it came with. And again, we keep forgetting as educators that children are absolutely capable of understanding violence if you teach it to them properly and you tell them, instead of hiding them from violence, and one day suddenly they wake up and they're like, wow, the world is so fucked up. Nobody deserves to go through that. We didn't deserve that.
Yeah, and especially as children, the fact that so much of that violence is inflicted upon us by our families or caregivers, and, you know, that is normalized to such an extent that it's so much later that you actually are able to identify that as violence. Like, we...
Yeah. And so, if it's not addressed in the classroom and you're not helped to draw boundaries around your violence and define it and understand it, how else do you process it? How do you, I mean,
yeah,
by just saying, let's not talk about it.
Exactly. Let's not talk about it. It's, you know, it will just go away. I don't like talking about, you know, sad things. I don't like talking about bad things. Those things are going to keep happening. And yeah, of course, this links to larger issues of how we don't talk about violence until it happens to us, and then suddenly everybody wakes up or something. And we as a society just can't deal like this. We can't, this is not how, at least the societies that come after us, the people who come after us should not be subjected to not talking about violence in the same way. So yeah, this is how feminist excitement leads to just trying more ways to talk about things that matter to us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, here's raising a toast with gin, cider, or a glass of chas to all the let's make a band versions of feminist projects that emerge and result in projects like Transform. Just completely in awe and completely rooting for you guys. All the links will, of course, be in the description of this episode. But is there anything else that you would want to plug or say anything specific about?
You can find Transform South Asia with the name Transform South Asia anywhere. Hopefully, we will transform South Asia at some point. But yeah, until then, you can buy us a coffee and support our work, because we are constantly applying for grants. But the more money we have, the more more trans people can review this. We absolutely don't want them to do it for free. And yeah, I think the last thing I'd like to say is thank you to every single feminist that I know for doing what you can in your capacity. It adds to the larger picture.
That's true.
So true.
Thanks for coming on, you guys. This was great.
It's amazing.